been a minute. Been ultra busy with personal stuff, business, mostly business. So I just haven't had a chance and been just, yeah, it is what it is. Anyways, tonight I had a friend come over and I had wanted to talk about something previously. And I just hadn't had I wasn't motivated to write it. And this particular friend of mine, he's I've talked about him before. We've talked on the off the podcast. We used to work together, and I'll tell you a story about him here in the podcast a little bit later on. But every time he and I get together, and we've only gotten together twice now since we both have left our former service, and he moved away. He's East Coast. He's worked in Tennessee and a couple other places, and so he's still out that way, but possibly making a comeback, and I hope he does. We have some good conversations, and that's kind of what today was about, or this podcast is kind of about. So one thing I thought about tonight, and this is going to piss off a lot of people when I say this. Okay, I've said this before. I've said on multiple podcasts. I don't care if people ask me, you know, what's the worst thing you've ever seen? I don't care if people ask me that. And to be honest with you, the reason why it didn't bother me was I relive my worst day all the time. I don't need people asking me in order for me to relive it. I do that without them asking. And one of my worst ones, and yeah, if I have to say it, there's a trigger warning. So if you get triggered off of what I talk about for calls that I've ran, I suggest you turn off this podcast right now. Because I'm going to bring up something that you may not like or may trigger something in you. And I'm not trying to. I get triggered a lot by things. And so I get it. But here's the thing. Well, here. I can't back out of my driveway easily. Fortunately, my newest car has a backup camera and has relieved a lot of my anxiety and stress when I have to back out of the driveway. I think I've talked about that before. I won't tell you what it is. I think most of you can figure it out from there what it is. But here's my thing. This is something I don't understand. This goes along those lines of not caring if people talk about it. Why is it that when I and another first responder get together, we can talk about every bad call we've ever had? And neither cares. Example, tonight, my buddy came over, and he's done all three first responder positions. He's been law enforcement, he's been fire, and he's been EMS. We ran EMS together. Now, this dude, stand-up guy. I'm telling you right now, stand-up guy. One of the best. And we were talking, and he had brought up that he's had to shoot and kill people as a cop. A lot of them have. A lot of them haven't, but a lot of them have. In the areas he's worked, I wouldn't be surprised if it was more than one. And he can openly talk about that, and I know he can openly talk about it with me. Now, my question to you is this. Why is it you get triggered by the public asking you, but you don't get triggered by another first responder asking you? That's what I don't understand. I don't care who asks. It doesn't matter to me. Now, my usual response is, and I've told you this before, the craziest thing I've ever seen is people. The worst thing I've ever seen is my paycheck. But in reality, is that true? No. I've seen some of the nastiest, wildest, unimaginable things that people can't even imagine, right? We have. If you've been in this business a long time, you work in any type of system, you're going to see it. And we know this, and we still got into it. And even if we didn't know it, we learned about it within a few months, and yet we stayed with it. So you know, when people ask, they're curious. They want to know if it's really what it's perceived or what they perceive it as. Tell them. Go ahead, tell them. The people I've told my actual worst call to usually stop me or walk away. And or they shake their head in disbelief and don't believe a word I say. So, I don't know. I'm beginning to think we're full of ourselves if we're that way. If we're willing to talk about it with others but not the public. You know, with other first responders but not the public. I just think we're full of ourselves. I really do. And I used to be that way. And I'm not saying I'm better than you. I'm just saying that's how I see it. I just do. So, tell them. Go for the shock and awe. Tell them. You already, listen, if it's the really, truly is your worst call that gives you nightmares and this and that, you relive it every single day, and them asking you didn't bring up anything you weren't already thinking about. Just how I see it. Maybe it's just my age. I'm just getting old. I am old. Not even getting old. I am old. But tonight, my buddy and I, we were talking. One of the things that came up was isolation. Why do we want to be isolated in this industry? Why is it that we feel like we want, you know, you always hear, we always talk about, you know, manifesting 20 acres in the middle of nowhere and da-da-da-da-da, right? And I'm the same way. I used to live in the LA beaches. I used to live in Marina Del Rey. I used to live in Redondo Beach. I worked in Santa Monica. I've been in the thick of populations. And at the time, I enjoyed it, but I wasn't in EMS. So, what changes? What's the trigger for that? And so, because now I have... I won't say I have zero desire to move back to the beach. I would love to move back to the beach, but I want to move to one that's not so heavily impacted population-wise. And I know once you get away from Southern California beaches and even Central California beach, it's not as impacted. I used to live in Oregon and went to the beach there. And I'm not saying all beaches, but for the most part, you know, you go to the Pacific Northwest, go to the beach. When I lived in Oregon, you couldn't live at the beach unless you were retired or had some type of income, that self-generating income, because there was no jobs there. There wasn't enough population there. There was no businesses there, et cetera. So that I could do. And my ultimate goal, I would love to retire in San Diego, but the area I'm looking at in San Diego is not heavily populated. So just... I think you guys kind of get my point from that. But ideally what I want, I could go for 20 acres in Montana and no neighbor around. I could be good with that. My wife, on the other hand, can't. My kids, on the other hand, can't. But for me, simple. Put me in the middle of nowhere. Middle of the forest. I'm a happy camper, right? I don't want to be around people. And so it got me thinking, and I wanted to... you know me, I try to do a little bit of research on what I'm talking about. And I found this thing called ERES, and some of you have probably heard of it, but it's emergency responder exhaust syndrome or exhaustion syndrome. And this article was written about it, and it's a perspective on stress, coping, and treatment in the emergency responder melee. And it's written by a few people here. It looks like they've all got PhDs. Looks like one's a psychology doc. It seems to be the only ones they are. It seems like they're all psychologists, right? And you can search it out. It's easy to find. And basically talks about critical incidents and, you know, signs of emergency responder exhaustion and things like that. And one of the things that they talked about was these are the things that could affect an emergency responder, and the list was expanded to the following. Critical incident could be a line of duty death, serious injury in the line of duty, suicide of a working partner, injury or death of a child, prolonged exposure to a victim who dies, multiple injury or fatality accident, victim is known to the responder, any incident where one's personal safety is in peril, including deep undercover work, exposure to infectious disease, unusual media attention, and administrative and or coworker betrayal. Those are lists of critical incidents. Now, the characteristics are depression, isolation, and exhaustion. So, isolation. Let's talk about what they talk about with isolation. I'm going to read this word for word from this article. And it says, there's a strong need to conform and be a part of the team in the emergency services. Emergency responders rely on each other for emotional and physical survival. And peers motivate one another to confront and handle danger. Responders may also develop a sense of separation, isolation, secrecy, and resistance to outside criticism. Noted in Brown and Campbell, 1994. At times, responders may believe that they are not worthy of the respect and trust of fellow peers. Simply leaving the job will not alleviate symptoms. In fact, separation from police duties increases vulnerability and symptom to the symptoms. And that's from a Patton, Violante, and Schmuckler article in 1999. Yet they may isolate from the very people who could help them recover out of fear of being discovered as frauds. As an example, one responder experienced an intense negative reaction after receiving a reward, recognizing her investigative abilities. She explained, "No one knew how badly I felt inside. As a result of my experience investigating the case and receiving that award just proved that I was a fraud." Now, as always, some background noise from my sprinklers. When I got to this part of the article, that's where the whole thing fell apart and I stopped reading. So, maybe this goes on to explain it a little differently, but I doubt it. And what I wanted to say is, that is not why we want to isolate. I do not want to isolate because I fear that my coworkers felt I was inadequate or that I was a fraud by any means necessary. That has, I don't care. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But I was talking to my buddy tonight and it's kind of a little side story for you, but we were sitting on the tailboard of our rigs doing paperwork, cleaning gurneys, whatever, and we're in LA, and this lady, you know, we were all sitting around just talking, and this hospital wasn't anything big. They were a non-specialty hospital. I don't think they had one specialty. They were just a typical general receiving facility. I think they could handle, you know, fractures, and that's about the majority of their trauma capability. They weren't a stroke. They weren't STEMI, nothing. So the calls we had dropped off were nothing big. We're sitting around. We're shooting a breeze, just kind of, you know, being EMS, right? And laughing and joking outside the ER. And unfortunately, the public exit from the hospital ER dumps you right into the ER bay or the ambulance bay. So we're sitting around talking and laughing, and these people came out and said something in Spanish and were ripping us for laughing, right? How could we be laughing? You know, people inside are dying, and we just dropped off a patient that probably was dying, and, you know, just a bunch of nonsense. And the thing was, all of us were white, like plain and simple. You would look at us and you would go, you're not going to understand Spanish, right? And yes, I'm profiling. I'm racism. You call whatever you want, but we were a bunch of goofy white boys, right? The funny part is my buddy speaks fluent Spanish. Fluent. And he went off on her just in Spanish. And the look on her face was phenomenal. Right. And that's in. So why am I telling you this? Right. Because that's what I'm talking about. we want to isolate because of the evil that we have seen in the world. That's it. I don't want to isolate for any other reason. I've seen the evil. I know what can happen in a group of people. I know what can happen on a street corner and you step off the curb. I know what can happen when you're sitting at a bus stop and a car pulls up in front of you and a dude jumps out and puts a gun to your head. I know that happens. You can tell me it doesn't, but I can tell you it does. You can be like, ah, it's Hollywood. No, no, no. That's Bell Gardens. No, that's the city of Bell. It's flat out had a dude on a bus stop. Call comes in, 12 noon, middle of the day. Man down at a bus stop. Card pulled up, jumped out, put a 9mm to the dude's head and pulled the trigger. Middle of the day. Straight up ran that call. So, and I'm going to come back to that a little bit in a minute, but what I meant by the evil in this world too is the part where we're doing our job and people still want to come and lay into us and read us the riot act because we're blowing off a little bit of steam, right? That's part of it. Because we can't be ourselves. We can't be ourselves out in public. We can't talk or act the way we want to talk because people look at us and go, we're evil, we're morbid, and we have no feelings, and we shouldn't be doing our jobs, and blah, 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 and they're gonna rip into us. I don't want to hear it. But the one thing with my buddy, with him coming over, and he had come over 2 years ago because, again, he lives out of state, and when he came down 2 years ago, my wife was actually in the hospital, and that's when she had COVID. She was dying, and he had come over, and we got kicked out of the restaurant because we've been sitting for so long because we were just talking. It's like therapy, right? And that's one thing we always talk about. We always want to, if we get a therapist, we want one that's been in the industry. And I completely understand why now, because I've been to therapy. But before I just say, oh, well, you know, I'd give the cliche of, well, they just don't understand what I'm going through. I've pinpointed it now, and I understand it's not necessarily that, and I'll explain in a sec. I'm literally going to be tying this all together here in a minute. But anyways, when he came over, we just had dinner at my house. And my wife is gracious enough to make dinner while I hang out with my friend and we talk and just relax. And my wife makes dinner and then she was, you know, managing the kids and giving them baths and getting them ready to go to school tomorrow and just doing everything that just phenomenal, right? I can't praise her enough for that. But when my buddy was, we were planning this get together, just coming over and talk, I was like, man, my kids, I have some rambunctious kids, you guys. I mean, everybody goes, oh, that's a boy. No, dude, I'm telling you, my boy is off the chain, right? And my daughter can be too. And I love them for it. I do. They're having a blast and I get to live vicariously through it. And yeah, there's times most of the time they drive me crazy up the wall, but I just got to remind myself that, man, they're living a good life. They're living a life that I never had. They're living a life that, you know, hasn't been tainted by EMS and fire and law enforcement and this and that. And I'm praying that they continue to stay that way. But I thought because my kids are so, bring this back, scrolled out there, because my kids are so rambunctious and off the chain, I thought it was going to be an issue. And not just because, you know, you think, oh, he's going to be wired or this and that. It wasn't that. It was just, can't talk. My kids are constantly in my face. Like, Dad, I need this. Dad, I need that. Or what about this? Or they're screaming and they're hollering. And it's just not a place to hang out. You can't hang out with my kids in the room. It just doesn't happen. But we went out to the backyard and we were having a beer and talking. And I realized at the moment, you know, my kids would come out and they'd ask me for something. They'd hug me or whatever. And they'd look at my friend and they'd say hi. And you know, just being like shy kids, you know, and I realized it just brought a sense of normalcy to the room, it's not really a room, but you know what I mean. And I could see my friend who, he's 36, and I could just see him kind of light up when my kids came around, and I was like, you know what, I get it. I understand as we get older and we deal with what we deal with, how kids will bring that normalcy. It brings us back to being a normal human being. But the thing with my buddy coming over and my kids there, it took that mentality of being a first responder, and it showed me, and I can guarantee it showed him, of just how or what life was like before we did this, right? I don't remember what a normal life is, really, per se, because I've been doing this for so long. But in that moment with him and my kids here, I got to feel it again. And I'm telling you right now, it was a breath of fresh air. But it's where you're not constantly having to look over your shoulder. And I don't do that in my own house, of course, but you're not, you know, I wasn't looking over my shoulder. I'm not worried about how all the different ways my kids could get hurt traumatically, you know, around the house, or I'm not thinking about how my wife could be in the hospital dying, or, but for a few hours, I got to be normal again. Not a first responder, just two friends talking, hanging out, not talking shop, which we did talk shop, but we talked more like career goals and aspirations and how to get to where he wants to go and me going where I'm not going anymore. And I don't have any aspirations for careers anymore. I'm self-employed, like I tell you on every single show, but I don't have aspirations to get this dream job. I don't have one. I've done my dream job, and it turned out not really to be a dream. It turned out more of a nightmare. So, but again, you're not on point. You're not hypervigilant. You're not worried about anything, right? For lack of better terms, it was a safe space. That's what it was. He and I sitting here talking in my own house with my kids, my family. Perfect setting. Absolute perfect setting, right? Drinking a beer. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to smoke cigars. So when you do come back in December, my friend, we need to light some cigars and enjoy a time on the back porch again. So, but, you know, going back to isolation, we don't isolate out of fear of being judged. We want it because we've seen the evil. Flat out, we have seen evil in its worst way. And one of the things we had talked about, and I've said this before, we have seen and done things that Hollywood can't reproduce. Number one, the stuff you've seen has happened in some shape or form, and then they just do a little tweak on it, right? And so there was a show, I don't remember what it was called. It was a 911 show, and the very first opening scene of like the trailer, not even a trailer, the pilot episode was where a helicopter was landing and they crashed the helicopter on top of the hospital or on top of this landing pad. It was comical, right? And the guy like jumped out at the right time. But at my hospital alone, in less than 1 year, we had an incident on the helipad with a helicopter where it nearly crashed. Again, not what you hear, and it's... But that's where Hollywood got their idea, not necessarily from mine, but an incident happened and then they over-dramatized it, and that's where they come up with it. So, but he and I were talking, and you guys know this if you've been there, and you can't reproduce a mother's scream. You can't reproduce the gore, right? And so what I mean by that, again, it's... You walk into an incident and there's things that you will see that nobody else has ever seen, and no pictures get taken. They don't get passed around. You don't get to show that off. Hollywood can't duplicate it. You can't do it, right? And that's what I'm talking about. It's that type of evil that we've seen that we don't want to be around it anymore. And, you know, they talk about, you know, one of the things, like I said, they talked about was how you didn't want to be judged. And I know I'm jumping around and kind of doing it on purpose, but look, I know I can be cocky. Some of you are going, yeah, we know. And I'll admit it. But here's the thing. Remember, I handled my shit. I did. I have countless medics, nurses, EMTs, firemen, law enforcement, trauma surgeons that will tell you the same. they'll tell you I was good at what I did. Am I the greatest? No. Never wanted to be. I don't ever strive to be the greatest at anything because I don't think it's possible. I strive to be good. So I don't worry about being judged by anybody in EMS. I don't. I never did. I don't care. There's only three people on this earth that I care about what they think. That's my wife and my two kids. Other than that, God, that's the only other one I want to please. Other than that, there's nobody here I care to please. I don't care to please. I don't care what you think. Couldn't care less. I really couldn't. And So when you're trying to impress people, my question to you is why? Why are you trying to impress them? They're not paying your bills. If you did your job, you still have a job, so you don't got to be worried about getting fired. Why are you trying to impress people? There's a saying Susan Orman, I think is her name. She's a financial guru, if you will. And I think I've brought this up before. And one of her slogans is stop buying things with money you don't have. No. Stop buying things you can't afford with money you don't have to impress people that you don't even know. Kind of my same theory here. Why am I trying to impress somebody that doesn't matter to me or provides any benefit to my life? Even if you provide a benefit, why do I need to impress you? I don't need to impress you, and you don't need to impress me. Do your job. That's impressive nowadays. Just doing your job. But one of the things, again, jump around, going back to isolation. I told you I was in therapy for a while. And I basically told her, which was ironic, that being that hypervigilant and always on point or on guard with making sure everything goes smooth. And some of you, if you're a parent and you're a first responder, you really understand what I'm saying about this. But when you're in public, you're always watching. You're always making sure. And some of you, even if you don't have kids, you're doing this, hopefully. But you're constantly looking over your shoulder. You're constantly, we always talk about sitting at a restaurant. You face the door so you can see if something bad were to come in. And if somebody were to come in, then you start formulating a plan. Okay, so if they did, where would I go? Okay, well, there's an exit door to my right. It's two seats back and then out the door. Do you have a safe word for your family? Tell them, hey, this is, if I say this word, that means just duck and run. Once we get outside, then what? What if we get outside and there's a shooter there, or there's a, what if there's an earthquake and the building starts to collapse? Where are we going to meet? And then, things like that. It's our pre-planning, right? And she's telling me, she goes, what is it that you're worried about? And I said, I'm worried about things going sideways. She says, but things don't go sideways every day. And I went, yeah, they do. She goes, no, they don't. I said, they do. And I know this because I ran on people's days going sideways all day long, every single day. She goes, yeah, but you weren't there. It's not your problem every single day. Right? And I said, you're right. But I don't live in that world of if it's going to happen. I live in the world of when it's going to happen. And I've seen it all day long, every day that I worked. And I ran 9 calls a day, 4 days 1 week, 3 days the next, 4 days, 3 days, 4 days. I did that for 4 years on an ambulance in LA. So I saw days go sideways every single day. So the question then becomes, how long till my luck runs out and it becomes my bad day and it goes sideways? want to isolate because I've seen the evil of this world that exists. And I've seen my fair share, more than my fair share. And at this point in my life, I want to stay away from it as much as possible. Because at any given moment, two planes can hit the Twin Towers. At any given moment, Oklahoma City bombing can happen. At any given moment, my city could be ambushed, as in the Gaza Strip. At any moment, we could be stuck in a massive snowstorm. We could be stuck in a hurricane. Our day could go sideways at any moment. And I think as first responders, we understand that. And as first responders, we always try to mitigate as much as we can, even beforehand, right? That's pre-planning. That's having a trauma bag, an airway bag. That's having meds ready to go. That's having quick deployment of any one of our tools. It's to mitigate and to lessen that incident, to be prepared so that our day can't go sideways. Can't go sideways if you're ready for it, right? I mean, it can, but for the most part, no. Because we train for that. We're studied for that. We're ready for that. But if I got 20 acres and I'm in the middle of nowhere and I've got everything I need to survive, I've got a roof over my head, and then if I have a basement in case there's a hurricane, I've created a fire break so I don't got to worry about the wildland fires. I don't live in a flood zone. There's nobody within 20 miles of me. I don't need electricity, gas, water. I have all that. I have a weather station so I can see there's a hurricane coming so I can be prepared and go into my basement. I got all my own food, plenty of ammo. Good health, because I eat right. Do you see my point? Like, that isolation becomes our, we've mitigated all of our possible scenarios that we can come up with of everything put together that we've seen. We store our food in the right boxes. We set up a basement in case the hurricane comes, and then we have warm clothing down there. We have plenty of food. We got, you know, internet and TV and this and that. And we're ready for whatever comes. It's how we've been trained. It's how we were taught. So, to the people that wrote the paper called A Perspective on Stress, Coping, and Treatment in the Emergency Responder Melee, or MELU, you got it wrong. I have a funny feeling none of you are first responders. And you don't understand our point of view. If you guys really want to write a good paper on that, go be a first responder for 2 years in a heavy 911 system. And see how you feel when you come out. And then come and talk to me. And then you can write a paper about this type of stuff, about the emergency responder exhaustion syndrome. And then you can tell me why you want isolation. It is not because you're afraid that your team will judge you. I promise you, it has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with mitigating things that can go wrong. Anyways, I probably should have read the whole paper, but I can't commit to that. It just doesn't happen. I don't have the brain capacity. I don't have the focus. So, yeah. So, a little bit heavier today. I know. But it was a good time. And like you said, I hope my buddy, he knows who he is and he listens. I know he does because he had mentioned some stuff to me, which was helpful to me. I needed to hear it because I was feeling the burnout again, even this quickly on the podcast. I'm kind of feeling like that. But he, he just put it in perspective. So I appreciate that. And listen, my friend, if you, I know you're coming back in December, and please, please, please hit me up so we can get together. I could use another therapy session with you. And I hope he's feeling the same way. I'm sure he is, but I'm really hoping he is. And he's going through some things, trying to figure some things out career-wise, and hopefully we can knock it out and figure it out. So with that, I leave you with this. Find someone you can sit down and talk with that you can consider your therapist. Because at this point, he's pretty much becoming mine. And because I know no matter what I talk about, he's already been there and he's done it and he's done worse than me. And I don't mean that in a negative way to him. Again, law enforcement, and had admitted openly that he's had to shoot and kill people and take lives. And so he's, you know, he's taken lives and he's saved lives and brought lives into this world. And he's done more than me. So for me, it's therapy. So hopefully I'm the same for him. Anyways, with that, I'm going to go to bed. It's late, and I got stuff to do. So at this point, I'm just rambling. You guys have a good one. Keep lounging.